Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast for today. In part one, you heard from Hoffman Center employee Grimaldi Vargas, who recently triumphed in her first Spartan sprint race. And she's a perfect illustration of how to successfully gain weight. Our subject today is unexplained weight loss and difficulty gaining weight and how to overcome it. And so let's drill down a little bit on this subject, because this is a worthwhile subject. For a lot of you are going to say, hey, that doesn't concern me because my problem is I'm always trying to lose weight. But there's actually considerable minority of people out there who are weak and underweight, and they're having a difficulty bulking up. And so this is a real concern. So let's take a look at some of the medical causes for difficulty gaining weight or weight loss, and then we'll talk about some potential solutions. So first of all, if someone is beginning to lose weight, this can be a sign of a serious medical problem. And all too often, you know, we tend to panic. We say, oh my goodness, I just saw Irving last week and he lost so much weight. He must have cancer. And the answer is, well, maybe Irving doesn't have cancer. Maybe Irving has deliberately undertaken a program of healthy weight loss. And you like the old version of Irving, who looks pleasantly plump and prosperous. And now he's normal weight. And so that isn't necessarily bad. But for people who begin losing weight uncontrollably, it can be a sign of a serious disease. It can be a sign of the onset of ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, particularly when accompanied by challenging gastrointestinal symptoms, diarrhea, blood in the stool, even constipation sometimes. And actually, one of the major reasons why young children have what's called failure to thrive is that they may have an as yet undiagnosed case of ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. Their symptoms may not be that distinct. They may not be that good at communicating their symptoms, and yet they don't reach their growth milestones, and they're very skinny. Alternatively, difficulty with weight may be a sign that you are developing a cancer. It could be the onset, God forbid, of pancreatic cancer or colon cancer. So a sudden change in your weight that's involuntary, particularly when accompanied by a decrease in appetite, that's worth checking out. It needs to be checked out. Another reason for weight loss is that your thyroid can go haywire in a less typical way than for most people. Most people develop hypothyroidism. Their thyroid is low and they have a heck of a time losing weight because their metabolism has slowed. Well, the opposite happens when you develop hyperthyroidism. You become hypermetabolic. It's as if you're on speed, and you then begin to eat a lot. Your appetite may actually increase, but you won't gain weight, or you'll actually lose weight because you're burning off the fat. But deceptively, some people with hyperthyroidism, they're not always thin. They can be overweight too. So that's not always a sign of hyperthyroidism. Another medical cause of weight loss is Addison's disease. It's an adrenal problem, and it means that your adrenals have basically checked out. When your adrenals are overproducing, it's a little bit like you're on steroids and you gain weight. Like if you take prednisone, you get fat and diabetic. But if your adrenals don't work and they fail, you can often become very underweight. As a matter of fact, if you're developing type 1 diabetes, instead of gaining weight, as in type 2 diabetes or non-insulin-dependent diabetes, if you suddenly spike your blood sugars and if you become very thirsty and you're losing weight, that could be a sign of diabetes. These are all medical possibilities that doctors have to entertain when they see people with unexplained weight loss. But by far the most common causes of weight loss are, number one, malabsorption, and number two, sarcopenia. So let's tackle malabsorption first. Malabsorption can occur when you don't have adequate digestive enzymes, or it can occur sometimes when you have bacterial overgrowth in your gastrointestinal tract by virtue of taking too many antibiotics, or if you eat a junky diet, you can actually develop malabsorption because the bacterial balance in your intestinal tract has an irritative effect, or it changes the way that you process foods, and you don't process foods normally, and the foods may just flow through you. Alternatively, you may have a food intolerance or a food allergy. Food intolerances include wheat allergy, dairy allergy, but you also might have a lactose intolerance, and that means that if you drink milk or have cheese that's rich in lactose, it'll just run through you, and that is a form of malabsorption. But the most common and serious form of malabsorption is gluten intolerance or celiac disease. They're actually different. Celiac disease is a formal diagnosis of an autoimmune disease related to gluten intake. And gluten intolerance is actually what Grimaldi Vargas suffered from in the previous podcast. She had gluten intolerance, which meant she was eating a lot of wheat products, pasta, and bread, trying to gain weight, but she was intolerant to them, and they may have caused irritation in her gastrointestinal tract. They may have just run through her, and the irritation in the gastrointestinal tract prevented proper absorption of critical nutrients that are necessary for building muscle. And so this is actually, celiac disease is really needs to be looked for in people who can't gain weight, who are very thin, and it particularly should be looked for in kids who fail to grow properly. I saw a really tragic case of a kid recently. He's now a teenager who was diagnosed with failure to grow and was given growth hormone many years ago. And he took the growth hormone, grew a few inches, but then became sick and depressed and had to drop out of school. And it was only until I tested him for celiac disease that we discovered he actually has not just gluten intolerance, he actually has full-blown celiac disease that may have not just affected his growth, but may have affected his mood and his outlook and his whole well-being. So on a gluten-free diet, we're going to try and get him ship-shape, but it's a shame that he was placed unnecessarily on growth hormone, which itself has been shown to increase the likelihood of depression in children. So it's not a completely harmless or innocuous treatment. It may make you grow, but at a cost. And if you can avoid that by going on a gluten-free diet and promoting absorption, that would be far better. So we obviously do a lot of dietary detective work. Sometimes malabsorption is caused by lack of pancreatic enzymes, digestive enzymes, and the use of pancreatic enzymes and digestive aid and support can help to overcome malabsorption. The other main problem that causes, especially adults, to experience weight loss is something called sarcopenia. And sarcopenia is the natural process by which people lose muscle. It's estimated that you lose 10% of muscle through each decade of life past the age of 35 or 40. And so there's this process by which sometimes it's replaced by fat, so it's not apparent that you're losing weight, but sometimes older individuals get frail. And this is because there's something called sarcopenia. And sarcopenia is partially due to decline in hormones. And in men in particular, we can address sarcopenia with testosterone. In both sexes, we can address sarcopenia with DHEA, which is a unisex hormone that helps to support weight gain. So other things that are helpful in terms of weight gain, well, we try to, some people are on this very virtuous diet, especially health conscious people who come to the Hoffman Center. They're on vegetarian diets. They avoid red meat because they think it's bad for their heart. They eat tons and tons of fiber. And what in effect they're doing is they're following a diet that is best suited for someone who needs to lose weight. High fiber diet. You'll displace a lot of calories with fiber, which is non-caloric, and you'll feel early satiety and stuffed. And so these people need to be on a lower fiber diet with more concentrated nutrition from animal protein and from healthy fats. And some people, because of all the propaganda that we're getting, they avoid fat altogether. And they need to be informed that especially healthy fats and including saturated fat from coconut oil. By the way, coconut oil is a great way to gain weight because it's a concentrated source of medium-chain triglycerides, and I would recommend for someone who has difficulty with weight gain, take a few tablespoons of extra virgin coconut oil daily. It's a source of medium-chain triglycerides, and that can be very helpful for allowing you to regain weight. It's easily absorbed fat that is calorically potent. In working with weight gain, Grimaldi actually discovered this intuitively, is eating frequent small meals may be preferable to trying to eat big meals all at once, because some people who have problems with weight gain, they have early satiety, and it's important to consider the timing of meals and the portion size, and having frequent snacks of calorie-rich foods like nuts, maybe some whey protein to which you've added half an avocado, or to which you've added some coconut oil, or maybe some frozen berries as a source of calories. That's good. Eating a lot of sugar is not the way to go. There are drinks like Boost and Ensure and things like that. These are, for some people, they just run through you. They don't actually help you gain weight because they create a lot of digestive upset. And also, they're really nutritionally incomplete. They're poor quality sugars and fats and proteins that are really not that optimal, with a smattering of vitamins. And it's better to use custom prepared formulas that are designed by our nutritionists at the Hoffman Center. Layla knows how to prepare these types of formulas for people so that they can gain weight. There are other situations where people lose weight. One is patients who have really terrible problems with breathing. If you have COPD and it's very hard for you to breathe, that creates a hypermetabolic state, and you actually tend to burn more calories because of just the sheer difficulty of breathing. And the way to overcome that is with a diet that is high in protein and fat. And carbohydrates, actually, because of the way that they burn in the body, or the way that the energy is released from carbohydrates, they tend to create extra carbon dioxide in the body. Carbon dioxide is not just a global pollutant, something that we're afraid of because of global warming. It also tends to overaccumulate in people who have respiratory problems. And due to something called the respiratory quotient, it's more advisable for them to eat protein and fat as their caloric sources than the carbohydrates. They actually breathe better when they get their calories from fat. So in that case, a high-fat diet is recommended. Similarly, in patients with Alzheimer's disease and dementia, they become hypermetabolic. They actually increase their metabolism, and they have sometimes trouble maintaining weight. They become thin and frail, and appetite and taste buds tend to be disrupted, and sometimes it's a problem maintaining adequate caloric intake for them. When we assess patients for malabsorption, we do various tests for vitamins, for essential fatty acids, for amino acids. We find out if they have adequate intake and absorption. It's not just what's on their plate, it's what gets into their system. So we do a complete nutritional assessment. A useful test is something called a pre-albumin test. Albumin is one of the first things to go in malabsorption or malnutrition. And the pre-albumin test is actually a more sensitive way of determining whether people are getting adequate calories or whether they're absorbing the calories that they're taking in. Other problems, make sure that dental situations are properly addressed. Some people with ill-fitting dentures or bad dental hygiene, missing teeth, they just don't consume enough nutrients. And, okay, so let's say you got your nutrition nailed down and you're taking the right supplements and all that, and your hormones are in good shape. Well, I think Grimaldi is a great illustration of what it takes to gain weight, which is not just aerobic exercise, because aerobic exercise, if you look at fabulous marathon runners and long-distance runners, they're rail thin. However, people who are involved in strength training, repetitive lifting, they tend to put on muscle. And muscle is what we want to put on. We don't want to put just a reassuring layer of fat on your body, because that, you know, may fill you out, but it's not necessarily healthy. What we want to do is build muscle. So here's a case study. Grimaldi, in the previous part one of today's podcast, talks about her strength training program. And once you've ironed out your hormones and once you've ironed out your diet, you got to take your body out on the road, so to speak, to the gym, and exploit the fact that you're getting adequate nutrition and that your hormones are present in a proper balance to support muscle. You know, just by taking testosterone alone or even growth hormone, your muscles are not going to simply explode. You need to utilize the muscles to build the muscles and strengthen them, and they will adapt by enlarging. That's just muscle adaptation to stress. You know, you stress your muscles, and the adaptation is that your muscles will grow. And even muscles that have atrophied well into your senior years can be restored, at least in part, by proper strength training. I think strength training has gotten a bad rap because we tend to think of, oh, you know, that's just for muscle heads. And, you know, in the aerobics revolution of the 60s and 70s has convinced us that all we need to do is strap on some running shoes and, you know, take a long run. That's not going to cut it, usually, for weight gain. We need to have a rational program of strength training to make it work. Are there magic bean substances that help people put on weight? Well, you need to look at a full complement of all your nutrition, because you know, any deficiency in a critical nutrient can impair proper growth and proper muscle development. So, you know, if there's a critical problem, we can't figure out why, we'll look at hormones, we'll look at vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and fat absorption. There are a few tests that are sensitive for that. You can look at beta carotene levels, for example, or vitamin E levels to assess fat malabsorption. We can get a pretty good handle on that. And then we can work to enhance the absorption. Is IV nutrition an option for patients for weight gain? I actually don't think it plays that much of a role, because you can't put everything that you need into an intravenous. If someone is very thin, unless they get hyperalimentation, which has to go through a central line, that's a sort of a hospital-based kind of procedure. It's not generally for outpatients. It's hard to provide people with intravenous nutrition. Some patients say, well, you know, I'm thin. If I take some, you know, I don't like to eat, can just give it to me in an IV, doc. No, I'm sorry, that's just not going to work. We really have to address what's going on with your digestive system and what's going on with your hormones and get you physically active to promote healthy weight gain. So I think that's a pretty good explanation of the problem of weight gain. And I will say this, is that to some extent, it is actually much harder to gain weight than to lose weight. Losing weight is sometimes a matter of simply restricting intake and getting more exercise or fixing a metabolic problem like a thyroid problem. Gaining weight, actually more challenging, because weight to some extent is genetically fixed. And there's some people who are just on the thin side. And for those people, I say, you know, go to China or go to Vietnam or go to Africa and mingle with the crowds there, because you'll see a lot of relatively healthy individuals who, by our standards, look very thin, but are generally healthy and can live a long time if they're not prey to infectious diseases or accidents or problems that are present in the third world, wild animal attacks, because it's the natural state of men and women perhaps to be on the thin side, and just that we have different societal standards here that either we want people to look more like the average, pleasantly plump, or alternatively, we want to turn every young boy into some facsimile of Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's not going to happen for everyone. He worked very hard, but that state of musculature is not easily attainable for everyone, and certainly you don't want to undergo the various types of drug interventions and anabolic steroids and growth hormone, whatever else he pumped into his body in order to achieve that particular goal. So that's pretty, I think, a pretty good summary of the problem of unexplained weight loss and how to overcome it. And Grimaldi, I encourage you to read the article that we have at drhoffman.com, which is a perfect illustration of that principle and should provide hope for many of you who are out there looking for a role model and for some inspiration on how you can overcome your underweight problem. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.